Joe's mum stood at the hall door waving to us as we drove away. I could see her guardian angel standing in the doorway waving and gleaming with light. As Joe drove up the road, I turned more in the car seat, not wanting to lose sight of Joe's mum and her angel. Actually, all I could see was the light of the angel. Joe laughed at me. "What are you trying to do? Turn the seat around altogether?" "I am just trying to see your mum waving to us for as long as I can," I replied. As we drove on, Joe said, "You're a bit quiet." "I'm just thinking about tomorrow," I said, "about going into work with my engagement ring. If the excitement is anything like what it was in your mum's house, I think I shall be embarrassed. I feel very shy and nervous about it, but on the other hand I can't wait to show the girls my ring." I was home in no time. Just as I was about to get out of the car, Joe said, "Get back here and give me a kiss. Enjoy work tomorrow, showing all the girls your ring. I'll see you after work." We said goodbye. I went into the house. It was in darkness. I crept slowly up to my room, not making a sound, and got into bed. I didn't sleep well that night. I was too excited. I thought the morning would never come, but it did. I got up a bit earlier in order to catch an earlier bus to work, hoping to arrive before the other girls from my department and hoping that Valerie might be there so I could share my excitement with her and show her the ring. But I was very shy. As I reached the back entrance of the department store, I took a deep breath and went in. I went down the stairs to the cloakroom and clocked in for work. The cloakroom was a square shape with lockers all around the walls and a set of lockers dividing the room. I walked around the lockers and there was Valerie. As soon as she saw me, she jumped up from the seat and said, "I know by the look on your face. Let me see your engagement ring." "I told you I would keep my promise," I said to her, "just as you kept yours. You can have the first wish." Valerie took the ring off my finger gently, put it on her own and started to turn the ring towards her three times with her eyes closed and her lips moving silently. I could see her angel clearly, but only part of mine because my guardian angel was behind me. Then, as I looked up, I saw both angels' heads touch and, as I looked down, their feet touched and the angels started to wrap around each other. My guardian angel's wings seemed to stretch out to Valerie's angel's wings and they started to intertwine to make an oval shape. The floor beneath us disappeared. I watched Valerie as she opened her eyes. I could feel a wonderful peace and tranquility. I wondered if she felt anything of it. She took a deep breath and gave me a wonderful smile saying, "Thanks, Lorna." More girls came in and I was surrounded by people congratulating me and stretching out their hands to see the ring and make wishes. Pauline, in particular, was thrilled. She was very romantic and adored a good love story. She had only met Joe briefly, but she thought he was very handsome and she was very happy for me. All the attention was very exciting. I asked the angels to grant as many wishes as possible, especially for my friends, because I knew they had many wishes, not just for themselves, but for their families and friends. The supervisor walked into the cloakroom and said, "What's all this excitement? Let me have a look." As she made her way through the girls who were still wishing on the ring, she asked, "Who's engaged?" "Lorna," everyone answered her at the same time. "I'm next to make a wish, girls," she said. She took the ring from another girl, ignoring the others who were waiting and slipped it onto her finger and made a wish. "Congratulations, Lorna. All you girls are off to the shop floor." They teased her back and she started to laugh. "Lorna, it's a beautiful ring," she said to me, "tell me his name." "Joe," I said. "I wish you and Joe all the happiness in the world. When is the big day?" "We are planning August of next year, maybe. We have not quite made up our minds," I answered. "My advice is, don't make it a rushed decision," the supervisor said, "give yourselves plenty of time. Now, we'd better get back to work." Later that day when I was in the canteen queuing for tea, the girls behind the counter said, "Lorna, we heard you were engaged. Congratulations." The canteen supervisor commented that everyone would be over at my table during the break to have a look at my ring and to make a wish. That's what it was like for the next week or so. I was so happy that everyone was happy for me and Joe. Even the security guard in the car park congratulated Joe when he came to pick me up after work that day. For the first time in my life, I felt I was the center of attention. But Mum and Da never sat down with Joe and me to talk about wedding plans. In fact, my family didn't seem to show a great interest in my wedding at all. After talking with Joe, I decided to ask Pauline, my friend at work, to be my bridesmaid. I knew she would be thrilled and would be a great support to me on the day. She was a little like me, very quiet, whereas the other girls in the fashion department frequently went to the pub together after work. It didn't really interest Pauline or me. The next day I told Mum I wanted Pauline as my bridesmaid, even though I had not asked her yet. Mum seemed surprised and suggested that my brother Barry should be the best man. That evening Joe and I talked about our wedding. Joe knew I was unhappy about it. He wanted to have words with Mum and Da, but I said, "No, I don't want our wedding to cost my parents much money, if possible. And we were saving hard for a home, so we didn't want to spend much money ourselves." Joe gave me a big hug and said, "Let's make arrangements to meet the parish priest and set a date for our wedding." Joe's family was completely different from mine, as far as our wedding was concerned. Joe's mum asked me which friends I was going to invite, and I told her that I would love to ask Pauline, Valerie and Mary from work, but I didn't know what they would think about me having the wedding reception in the house. I told her, "Since I started work in the department store, several girls have got married and they all have had their receptions in hotels. Mum is set on having it in the house, and I don't want to hurt her by telling her that I am disappointed at that idea. Joe and I have agreed we don't want our wedding to cost my parents much money, if possible." Joe's mum replied, "Don't worry, we will all chip in." Then everything seemed to begin to fall into place. A few weeks later, in the canteen at work having lunch with Valerie and Mary, they asked me had I set a date for the wedding, and I told them, "Yes, the 18th of August, and you're invited." They were delighted and asked where the reception was going to be held. I told them it wasn't decided yet. I didn't want to tell them that it was going to be at my house. Later that day I asked Pauline to be my bridesmaid. She said it would be an honor. I told her that Joe's sister Barbara would make her dress. Chapter 12, Country Cottage. I started to encourage Joe to look for a job somewhere else, to be independent. I said that we needed to stand on our own two feet. Talk to DA. I know he will give you a good reference. Joe got another job, no problem, this time working in Key, the Irish Public Transport Company. With the new job, Joe could not pick me up after work as often as he used to, so most evenings I got the bus home. One particular evening, as I walked round to the back entrance of the house, I knew something was going to happen. I noticed DA's newspaper, The Irish Press, on the dining room table. When the angels asked me to open it, I was reluctant, but I pulled out a chair, sat down at the table and started to turn the pages. My hands were trembling, I seemed to be moving in slow motion. I was afraid the angels were going to highlight something in the paper which would be distressing. "Don't be afraid, Lorna," my angels said, "just turn the pages and we'll tell you when to stop." I was turning the pages slowly, one at a time. I could feel my angel hostess's hand on my shoulder. "Now," he whispered in my ear, "look at the houses for sale." I looked, there were hundreds of houses for sale and I couldn't make sense of anything on the page. Everything was upside down and turned around. I looked up from the paper to see a crowd of angels sitting around the table. What a sight. It made me smile. "Hello," said Angel Elijah, sitting directly opposite me. He reached out for the paper and the tips of his fingers touched the page. It all immediately became clear. "Look now, Lorna," he said. I could see the words "cottage for sale in Maynooth." "Lorna, a little cottage with a big garden," said Elijah. "It's perfect for you and Joe. Read on." It was a tiny ad with only three lines. I read on, for sale, by auction, and a telephone number. Now, Lorna, put a circle around the advertisement and tear out the page, Elijah said. I did, and put the page in my pocket. Show the advertisement to your dear when you are ready, Elijah said. He will be able to help. There were tears in my eyes, I was so happy. Angel Elijah stood up, reached forward and, with the tips of his fingers, touched my tears. Tears of happiness, he said. Then the angels were gone. I showed Joe the advertisement for the cottage in Maynooth the following day, as we walked along the canal. I'll talk to dear when he gets home from fishing this evening, I said. I folded up the paper and put it back in my bag. Later that evening, when Joe had gone, D.A. got home from fishing. He put all his fishing gear on the floor and proudly took two large, fresh, pink, river trout, one at a time out of the fishing bag and laid them on the kitchen table. Mum was delighted. When D.A. had finished tidying away all his fishing gear, he sat down in his usual place. D.A., I said, I saw an advertisement in the paper for a cottage in Maynooth. It is going up for auction. How do you go about those things? He looked at me quite surprised. He probably thought I would have no notion of looking for a house. I didn't know what to think of the look on my DA's face but, without any hesitation, he said, show me the paper. I took the paper out of my bag and laid it in front of him on the little table. DA asked where the ad was. I have circled it with a black pen. Look, there it is, DA. On the bottom of the page on the right-hand side. D.A. looked up at me again with a surprised look on his face. I was standing and he was sitting and he read it very carefully before he said anything to me. Then, with a smile on his face, he said, well done and then asked, does Joe know about the ad for the cottage? Yes, I said, when I was with Joe today, I showed him the paper. We are both excited, but we don't know how to go about this. First things first, you'll have to get a loan, D.A. said. Joe and I have money in the bank, should we go there? I asked. Yes, he replied, and there are other places you could try, such as the council, for a housing loan, which would be cheaper than the bank. Leave the auction to me, I'll ring about that. Thanks, D.A., I said. I was delighted D.A. was helping us, and I was very excited at the possibility of buying the cottage. The next day I was off work and I walked down to the telephone kiosk and rang the local council and told them I was inquiring about a loan for a young married couple. I said we were not married yet, but we would be. The girl said she would send out the forms. I thanked her and hung up. Next thing, I rang DA and he told me he had inquired about the auction. It was in 2 days' time, so if we were interested we needed to go and see the cottage as soon as possible. He suggested that evening. I left a message at Joe's work for him to come straight to Uxlip. I was so excited, I ran home to the house and told Mum what DA said. Don't get your hopes up too high, she said. It's not that easy to get a loan, and you and Joe don't have much money. Joe and DA arrived at the house within 5 minutes of each other that evening. DA said there was no time for dinner as the power in the cottage was not on and we needed to look at it while there was daylight. We all got into DA's car, Mum as well, and drove to the cottage. It was about a 15-minute drive. When we pulled up alongside the little cottage we could hardly see it, as the hedge was so tall. The gate was locked and DA called into the next door neighbor, as the auctioneer had told him to, and got the keys. DA opened the gates and handed the keys to Joe. The garden was big, all overgrown, enormously overgrown. We walked up the path to the little cottage. Joe put the key in the door and turned the lock. As he opened the door, a horrible stale smell hit us. It was musty and damp. Clearly nobody had lived there for quite some time. The cottage was tiny, but Joe and I did not mind that, if only we could buy it. As we walked around the cottage, Joe and I told DA that we were concerned about the auctioneer. What would happen if we succeeded in getting the cottage? Wouldn't the auctioneers want to deposit? Did we need to take cash out of the bank in advance, as we did not have a checkbook? DA said that if everything went well, he would pay the deposit on the day and we could pay him back later. Every so often I would walk back into one of the little rooms on my own, in order to talk to the angels in silence about all of the things on my mind. As I walked through the rooms with Joe, Mum and D.A., the angels kept pulling my hair. Mum asked why I was putting my hands up to my head all the time. Was I making sure there were no cobwebs in my hair? I smiled to myself at the question. We were inside the cottage for only a few minutes, then we left and Joe pulled the door closed and put the key through the letterbox next door. While driving home in the car, Mum said, "It is in a terrible condition." D.A. glanced at Mum and then asked us, "Were we still interested in the cottage?" The two of us said yes together. That Wednesday morning, at about 9, I left home with my parents and we picked up Joe. D.A. stopped outside Joe's house and said to me, "You go and knock on the door." Joe opened the door, came over to the car and asked my parents if they would come in for a minute to meet his mum. They declined. Nevertheless, I went to her. She wished us the best of luck and said, "Another time I'll meet your mum. We will invite your parents for dinner some Sunday." Joe's mum was dying to meet my parents. She waved goodbye to us from the door as we drove off. I sat holding Joe's hand in the car. We never said a word. We were so anxious and I was constantly praying. Before I knew it, D.A. was parking the car. The auction was taking place in an old hotel. We were early, so we sat in the hotel lounge to have some tea and relax a little. I recognized a group of the people sitting in the lounge. I knew them as customers at the garage. Their name was Murphy and they were builders. D.A. got up from the table and walked over to them. I watched D.A. shaking hands and talking to them. They bought him a drink and there seemed to be great conversation and laughter. D.A. turned around and gave me a smile. From the look on his face, I knew everything was going well. I asked Joe what time it was. It was 10:45 and the auction was at 11. Just then, D.A. came back to the table. We were all dying to hear how he got on. D.A. asked if we wanted to hear the good news or the bad news first. "Good news, please," I said. "A number of years ago, when there was a petrol strike, I did the Murphys a favor by making sure they didn't go short of diesel or petrol," D.A. said. "Now it's their turn to do me a favor. I had a good chat with them and told them that you both had your heart set on buying this cottage. None of us had realized that there was land for sale as well as the cottage. The Murphys' main interest at the auction was in the land. They wanted the cottage as well, which was up the lane, to use for offices and parking trucks, but, after talking with D.A., they agreed not to go after the cottage themselves and to do all they could to help us get it." People started to leave the lounge and walk across the hall to the room where the auction was being held. The room wasn't very bright. There were lots of chairs in rows and a desk and chair at the top of the room. There were maybe about 20 people there for the auction. We sat in a row halfway down on the right-hand side, and the Murphys were on the left. There were several lots sold before they got to the cottage. One of them was the land up the road, which the Murphys bought. Eventually, it felt like forever, it came to the cottage, which was the last lot. The bidding started and a woman put her hand up and said a price. D.A. put his hand up and made a higher bid, then the Murphys named the price, then my D.A., and it went on like that for a little while. The woman gave up and stopped bidding. D.A. made a bid and the Murphys made one more but then stopped. £2,500, my D.A. said, and there were no further bids. When the auctioneer said sold, I felt I could breathe again. The auctioneer indicated to D.A. to come up to him and D.A. turned around to Joe and me, saying, "You two had better come up as well, seeing as it's you who are buying the cottage." The auctioneer asked for D.A.'s name and D.A. told him with pride that he was only doing the bidding, that it was Joe and I who were the buyers. He took our names and looked for the deposit. Without hesitation, D.A. said he was taking care of that. I remember looking at D.A. as he took out his checkbook. At that time, a 10% deposit of £250 was a huge amount of money to me. I felt so much love and affection for my D.A. as I watched him writing out the check. I was delighted that he would do this for us and I felt like hugging him. D.A. and Mum drove us back to Joe's mother's house. When we got there, his mum was standing at the railings in the garden, talking to a neighbor. Again, Joe invited Mum and Da in for a cup of tea. Again, my parents declined the invitation. We got out of the car as Joe's mum reached the gate. My parents waved goodbye and drove away. We told Joe's mum the great news straight away. "Let's go inside first," she said. "Tell me the whole story over a cup of tea. I want to hear every detail, and I have just baked some apple tarts." We went into the kitchen and Joe's mum put the kettle on. There were already cups and saucers, milk, sugar and apple tarts on the table. As soon as the tea was ready, the three of us sat at the kitchen table. Joe's mum was so eager to hear every detail that the conversation went on for some time. There was always great activity in that house, with family coming and going. They all wanted to hear the good news about the cottage. Some of the family said, "Maynooth, it is so far away. We will never get familiar with the idea that you will be living down in the country." I laughed and said, "You would think we were moving a million miles away, instead of about 25 miles. Joe's mum asked, "When can I go down and help you to clean out the cottage?" Joe looked at me and I said, "The weekend after next is my long weekend off." Joe said he was off that Saturday as well, so we agreed to meet at the cottage on that Saturday morning. Shortly afterwards, Joe brought me home. We were both very excited about everything that happened that day. A few days after buying the cottage, Joe and I decided to walk to Maynooth from Ilkeslip and start work on cleaning it up. We were very excited, and when we arrived, the gate was open. We searched for the key and it took us some time to find it. Eventually, Joe found it under a stone at the far end of the cottage. Our new next door neighbors must have heard us, as a lady came to the gate and shouted, "Hello there, I'm from next door." "Hello," I called as I went towards the gate, "I'm Lorna, and we're hoping to live here after we get married in 6 months' time." "That's absolutely wonderful," she said with a big smile. "It will be great to have neighbors. I'm Elizabeth." I invited Elizabeth in and we walked up the completely overgrown drive and turned to the right along the cottage wall to the main door. Joe was standing there and I introduced him as my fiancée Tilda Copyright. She was delighted to meet him. "You look like a lovely couple," she said. I invited Elizabeth in to see the house and Joe turned the key. We continued talking as we went in. "I dread the thought of you seeing how bad the inside of the cottage is," Elizabeth said. "It has been empty for such a long time now. The old lady who lived here, Mrs. Costello, died a long time ago." "That's all right, Elizabeth," I said as we looked around the rooms. "We'll get it looking all right in no time," Joe said. "Lots of scrubbing, strip the wallpaper off the walls, get the lino off the floor and get the old furniture out." Joe looked around. "Maybe we can save some of the furniture. The kitchen table looks good and perhaps those armchairs and the chest of drawers." The truth is we had no furniture, and very little money to buy any. We were going to be dependent on what we could salvage and what old furniture people gave us. "They'll clean up well and look nearly like new," Elizabeth said. "Please, God, my husband will be able to give you a hand doing some of the heavy work." Before Joe and I could say a word, she rushed out the door and was gone to find him. We laughed. She was a lovely lady, a little round lady, that's how I'd describe her. She had a beautiful smile and the energy I could see around her held a lot of love and care. She was the salt of the earth. In no time at all she was back with a tall skinny man with a very pale complexion and deep lines etched on his face. It was a face full of character. "Hello. How are ye?" he said. "This is my husband, John," Elizabeth said, as she introduced us and explained that we were getting married shortly and would then be moving in. "Well, Joe, you've a hell of a lot of work to do here," John said. "An awful lot of work." "Sure, you're right," Joe said. "Let's go around the back and have a look at the sheds." The two of them went out the door and left Elizabeth and I in the main room. It was quite small, with a fireplace. We went into the bedroom and had a good look around in there. The place stank. "God, look at the curtains. They're mangy," I said. They are in a terrible state and we don't have money for new curtains. Listen, Lorna, don't worry, Elizabeth replied, I'll take those curtains down during the week. I have nothing to do at the moment, and I'll wash them. I couldn't believe it, I said, God, Elizabeth, it's an awful lot of curtains to Washington, I'll wash and iron them and I'll come in and put them back up on the windows, and while I'm doing that I'll get John to clean the windows. We had a bedroom, a little front room, a little kitchen and another room, which one could use for a bedroom, but there was no toilet or bathroom. The kitchen is a good size for a young family starting out, said Elizabeth, but you'd better turn that little bedroom into a bathroom because you'll need one. You'll probably have children. Of course we will, I said with certainty, after all, the angel Elijah had told me so. But the outdoor loo will have to do for now. I wonder what sort of condition it is in. We went around the back of the house to have a look. It was completely wild around there. We could hardly see anything because the hedge was completely overgrown. There were also grass, weeds, nettles and stinging brambles that came up above my waist everywhere. We fought our way over to where she said the loo was. We could not see Joe or John, but we found the loo. It was just a loo in a long shed with a door. There was no toilet seat, but it was usable and it wasn't too bad. I asked Elizabeth about the building next door to it. It's another shed, we have the same next door. Then we heard Joe and John. Don't look into that shed, Joe said. That was irresistible, of course. Oh, I'll just have a peep, seeing as you said that. I peeped in and, of course, it was piled high as a mountain with all kinds of things. What are the other sheds like? I asked. You wouldn't want to look into them either, John said. Greater than you've got another big shed there and down past that you've got a piggery. It's a small shed with an outer wall around it and a gate into a little yard. It would be an ideal place if you had chickens. They are all full of junk but, sure, I'll give Joe a hand and we can clear some of it out when he's here next and burn it. God, John, you are very good to give us a hand, I said. John turned around and said, well, we'd better go now, Elizabeth, and leave the two of you to yourselves. As Elizabeth was walking away, she turned around and said, before you go home, would you like to come in for a cup of tea? We'd love to have you. Would you like to do that? I asked Joe. He nodded, we'll be in 5 or 10 minutes. We'll just have a little time looking around here and sorting out a few things. So off they went. I was really so happy and so was Joe. Isn't it wonderful that this house is ours now? We have a lot of work to do but I know we can do it. We went back into the house and Joe reached up and started to pull bits of the wallpaper off the walls, to see how hard it would be to strip them. It wasn't too bad. The lino on the floor was all torn and the two of us started to lift it. We got a shock because under each layer of lino there was another. Under the bottom layer, there was a thick layer of newspapers, hundreds of them all glued together. We looked at each other. Let's get something and see if we can move them, Joe suggested. We got a piece of stick and under all those layers of lino and newspapers were straw and clay. Eventually, under all that, believe it or not, were floorboards, quite decent ones. We found out later from Elizabeth that this was done to insulate the room, to keep the heat in. We had a lovely cup of tea with Elizabeth and John. She told me a little about Mrs. Costello who used to live there and how she looked like Mrs. Tiggerwinkle in the Beatrice Potter story, with a big hat, a big coat and she always carried a big bag. She lived on her own and never had any visitors. John invited Joe to see his house and garden. Looking through the window at them, I could see angels playing around them. I smiled. You seem so happy, smiling there, Elizabeth said. I am very, very happy, I replied. It was lovely to be there in their home, to have a happy family home right next to us, to see the light around Elizabeth and John. They also had a lovely little boy, I don't know what age he was, maybe 10. Anytime you need us, just give us a call, Elizabeth offered. We thanked them and Joe and I left and walked down the road holding hands. The following Saturday, Joe brought his mum to the cottage. I was already there waiting for them. When Joe's mum got out of the car, she gave us a big hug, looked around and said, "Oh my God. From the outside you have a big job on your hands.